It's time for Sweet Home Cannabama, a show that'll answer all your questions, provide accurate information, and dispel the myths of CBD. You can participate and have your specific questions answered by emailing sweethomecannabama.com. And now for all things cannabis in Alabama, here's your host, Jennifer Boozer.
Welcome to the show, everybody. I'm Jennifer Boozer, your host, owner of Cannabama, the CBD store. We're located at 558 St. Francis Street in downtown Mobile, 2090 Schillinger Road South in West Mobile, 3435 South Shades Crest Road in Hoover, and opening this week, if we can get our licenses in order, 8009 Vaughn Road in Montgomery, and of course, there's Cannabama Daphne over across the bay with our beautiful friend Whitney. We just had our grand opening, grand reopening there on Friday night, and had a really good time. Good turnout. There was good food. We just had a lot of fun and took some fun pictures and, you know, just met some great people. And some of our vendors were there to help us celebrate. So it was a really good time. I want to thank Whitney for all the work she put into that. It was a really great event. Even with the threat of rain, we had a good time. And I know that they have been really busy over there. So I think that it's been a good thing for them to join us and be part of the Cannabama family. I know Whitney works hard, so does Bubba. And they have been really doing a great job and representing Cannabama well. So we were happy about that. Speaking of anniversaries, August is the 2-year anniversary of Cannabama, and we are planning some events. I have been sort of round and round about this because I really wanted to be able to have a big blowout block party, and I've been talking about that. But the closer it gets and the more, you know, things aren't changing, the more that I'm not sure. So I can't say for sure right now exactly what we're going to do. We're still talking about it and figuring out whether or not we would want to spend a whole lot of money on a party when we really can't afford a whole lot of anything. And then, you know, and it be something that people are afraid to show up to. And that makes me sad, but, we are going to sort of compromise. We're still going to have ladies' night early in the month. And those are small things that we can control, the social distancing and mask wearing and things like that. Probably not going to go ahead with the facials since we're covering our faces, but we'll come up with something equally fun. Last time we did pedicure bombs, and that was fun. From week to week, you know, I really don't know how to plan anything anymore. So, you know, we're going to go with what we know and have our class, and it'll still be fun, and it'll still be free, and we'll still have a good time. So, not sure what we're going to do for the end of the month. I know we are going to do some weekly specials on top of our daily specials, and each week we will be drawing from every customer in every store that comes in if they choose to enter a drawing. And we will be giving away a nice fat bag of flour, or if you do not partake of the flour, another product of equal value, probably tinctures, or just a butt ton of gummies if that's what you want. But we're going to be giving away some really good prizes. We've got some new swag in the store. We're going to have some T-shirts new T-shirts printed. And I'm sure our vendors are going to be sending us some stuff to give away as well. So be looking for that on the Facebook page, on Instagram, on the website. And as always in the store, we'll try to keep everybody current. But, you know, if you're a member of our loyalty program, we will probably utilize our text system once a week. We try not to use it very often at all, but we will be using that this month. Just to let you know, hey, we've got a flash sale. We've got this special. Don't forget that we know you really like this product, and it's on sale. So I'm looking forward to that. I had no idea on August 3rd when I was at the courthouse and forming my very first LLC that this is what my life would look like now 2 years later. And it's been the hardest thing I've ever done, but the most rewarding outside of raising my children. And it's my fourth child. So It just requires a lot more attention than my actual children. And I can't spank it or ground it or press a pause button. And, yeah, I can't do any of that. Gosh, man, I wish I could sometimes. But anyway, it's I was just saying outside, being a business owner is not for the faint of heart. But during this time and in this industry, it's like, could anything be harder? I can't imagine. So it's been wild. We're trying desperately to keep the status quo for our customers. You know, sometimes we've had trouble keeping up with inventory. We have, you know, and I don't want to fire people. I don't want to close doors. I don't want to have substandard anything. But, you know, it's really, it's been hard. So if you haven't been to see us in a while or you've been thinking about seeing us, you know, come check us out. We are really good at what we do, and we love it with all our hearts. And you won't find better service or better products anywhere than Canabama. So that's my spiel. And I'm trying to, you know, juggle. The Hoover store is coming along well, and we are just days away from Montgomery. The only holdup will be, you know, how easy or difficult it'll be to get through the lines and get our county state licenses current in Montgomery County and the city of Montgomery. So we're ready to do that. We've got our signs on order. So you'll see bright, shiny, new lit signs and getting ready to do some commercials up there and thinking about syndicating this show. And that way our customers in Birmingham and in Montgomery will be able to hear the show as well. So we want to educate all of Alabama. We want to set the standard and raise the bar to the level it should be so that we help as many people as possible. And, you know, we'd like to lead the way. So anyway, be looking for all those exciting things. And we also have our online store, and that's canabama.com. If you have any questions and you're not getting out in public, we do phone consultations. We'll be happy to set up a video conference. You know, we're available in all the stores on the store phone number. So you can call the stores at 251-255-5155. There's an extension for each store. So, you know, give us a call. Use us. We're ready to serve. And if anybody has any suggestions, you know, if you ever come across us and you think something could be done better, something could be done a different way we could serve, something we haven't seen or thought of, you know, we're open to that. We want to make sure that we're as effective as possible. So on to the show. Tonight we are revisiting a recent guest, Alan Colvin, who is a lawyer here in Mobile, who is running for district court judge in Mobile County. And we talked with him several weeks ago about his candidacy and decriminalization of marijuana and what that means, how it's relevant to him, and kind of how that process works. Alan, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me, Jen. I appreciate it, and congratulations to you on the anniversary.
Thank you. Thank you. We've survived.
Hey, I commend you for all the work you put in to make that happen and the growth of your business, and I know that hasn't been easy.
Right.
That's not just a 40-hour-a-week job.
Not at all. Not at all.
And I like your descriptors you had there of your giveaways. I think you said a big fat bag of flour.
Maybe
a butt ton of gummies. Is that
a butt ton? That's a lot. That's a whole lot of good sleep and good mood.
I like that, but thank you so much for having me. And like you said, I am a candidate for Mobile County District Court Judge. We'll be on the ballot in November, and they'll also going to allow absentee voting by mail for anyone due to the COVID-19 situation. So people
right.
can look.
Right. So COVID is not a reason not to vote.
Yeah. So people can vote by mail. They just have to request their ballot from the absentee election manager right here in Mobile County. And there's a description of how to do that on our Facebook page.
Is there a deadline for that?
There is a deadline for that, but the absentee election manager's office is not going to open back up until September 1, so that'll be the earliest that you can actually order your ballot from them to be sent to you.
Right.
And then you'll actually have to get that ballot mailed in by the day before the election.
Okay.
But you'll want to get it done a lot sooner than that.
I thought it would probably be at least a week before the election, that makes sense.
You'll want to get it done a lot sooner than that. I hear they've been having problems with the mail, and mail slowing down and that sort of thing. So you'll want to get it done a lot sooner than that.
Right, right. Okay. Well, you definitely want to get out and make your voice heard, whether or not you agree with anything right now. Everything has been so crazy, and it does matter who is in all of these elected positions. Definitely use your it's really a privilege to be able to vote and have a say, and I think a lot of people are realizing just how important that is now, because a lot of people don't agree with what's been going on or how it's being handled, and they want to be able to, I don't know, just be able to maybe be a part of making better decisions.
Hey, very important to use your right and exercise your civic obligation to get out there and vote.
Well, we'll come back in just a minute with Alan Colvin.
Welcome back to Sweet Home Canabama. Now with all the information you want about CBD, here's your host, Jennifer Boozer.
Welcome back to the show, everybody. I'm Jennifer Boozer, your host. And we're here with Alan Colvin, who is a local lawyer and a judicial candidate in Mobile County. Alan, tell us, we talked a few weeks ago or several weeks ago when you were here about your sort of philosophy on decriminalization and your platform. Give us a little refresher on, sort of what your goal is in running for judge.
Okay, as we talked about before, I am running for Mobile County District Court Judge, and that is kind of the lower court in Mobile County. There are four Mobile County District Court judges. One of them is retiring, and that is the seat that I'm running for. And so it's not an incumbent judge that would be moved out of his seat.
Mm-hmm.
And our platform is safety, fairness, and common sense. Safety is the idea that all decisions I would make if elected would have public safety as a primary concern. We all want to live in a safe community. We all want our families to live in a safe community. That's obvious, and that's something I think we can all agree on.
Of course.
And fairness is all about making sure the average working folks always get a fair shake.
Right.
And then the common sense plank of the platform is about marijuana decriminalization and the fact that I'm an advocate for marijuana decriminalization.
Right.
And of course, that's why you've had me on the show, and that's why we're talking. But one thing that we've talked about is why that is relevant to a district court judge is...
Right.
Is that, a few years ago there was an effort by Sandy Stimson. It was publicly talked about by the mayor and the sheriff. They were talking about the possibility of decriminalizing marijuana in the city of Mobile.
Mm-hmm.
And the sheriff talking about doing it in the county. They didn't call it decriminalization. They didn't like that word politically for whatever reason. They didn't want to call it that. But what they wanted to do was they wanted to take misdemeanor marijuana possession for personal use, that was one of the crimes that they wanted to change from an arrestable offense to a ticketable offense.
Right.
And Mayor Stimson made some public comments that were in the news articles that said, this is about public safety. This is about keeping our officers on the streets and in our communities and not taking the time to bring these people down to the jail and
for nonviolent crimes
and all that sort of stuff.
In small weight.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. And
we're not talking about people with pounds in their trunk.
That's exactly
and
right.
Scales and, we're not talking about 30 pounds in your trunk.
That's right.
We're
that's
talking
right.
about people with a joint in their pocket or an eighth in their pocket that it's not even enough to share, really.
Right. And what they ran up against is that in Alabama, it is difficult, if not impossible, for a local jurisdiction to just decriminalize something. They can't change it from an arrestable offense to a ticketable offense unless they get permission from the Alabama Supreme Court, because there's an obscure rule of judicial administration that's set out and this governed by the Alabama Supreme Court, and that rule says that local governments within the state, municipalities, they can't change them from arrestable offense to ticketable offense unless they get permission from the Supreme Court.
Right.
And if a municipality in the state wants to do that, then under the rule, the procedure that has to be followed is a majority of your district court judges in that jurisdiction, which will be in that county that encompasses that municipality, would have to make that request to the Supreme Court and get that permission from the Supreme Court.
Yeah.
And so, and when, you know, I saw that, I said, well, you know, that's kind of interesting. And so that is what makes that issue relevant to a district court judge is when you have, because every, you know, the marijuana laws in our state are terrible.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, I know a large majority of people agree with that.
Yeah.
And they would tell you that. And what we're left with is, you know, well, I should say, if we're going to wait for Montgomery and the legislators in Montgomery to make the changes for us, then we're going to be waiting till the 12th and ever.
Yeah. Okay. Absolutely.
So the only other option we have is to elect people, local officials, who are going to be willing to stand up and speak out about this issue and try to make a difference on a local level, and then and have those local officials in this state put pressure on the officials in Montgomery to make that change. So if we're going to see change on this issue, I think it's something that's going to have to be a groundswell from the local level up to Montgomery rather than just sitting back and waiting for Montgomery to make those changes.
Right, because I'm sure a lot of people think if it ain't broke, don't fix it. Because it, you know, I mean, we could go into all sorts of reasons why people would want it to stay the way that it is. But it is. It's extreme, you know. I've had customers come in and tell me about some of the things that, like this one kid, he served 4 years, and he had personal use weight and no criminal history, and now he's a felon. And he'll always be a felon. And that in and of itself, you know, that's crazy for an amount of weed that wouldn't even, I mean, it was $50 worth of weed, you know. And he had never gone and got, he had never gotten arrested before, had no troubled past, nothing. And spent 4 years sitting in a cell. And now he will have to deal with all that comes with being a felon who spent, you know, he lost 4 years of his life. And the thing that seems so sad to me beyond that is a lot of times we hear horror stories about what happens when you're in prison. You know, nonviolent offenders get hurt. They are forced to defend themselves. Things happen, you know.
I mean, we've seen that in the news just over the last week. I mean, the Department of Justice has come to Alabama, and they've done an investigation and just issued a report and basically said that the conditions in our prisons in this state are so poor that they violate the prohibition against cruel and unusual punishment set out in the Constitution.
I have been told some things that are disgusting about the state. I mean, just the drinking water with bugs in it. You know, because they fill up a cooler they're supposed to empty out every day, and it doesn't get touched for 2 weeks, and there's dead bugs in it. That's disgusting. That you wouldn't do that to an animal, you know. And for and the psychological damage too, just to know that the people in charge of your care, because you can't take care of yourself now, because you had a bag of weed in your pocket. That's what they think of the value of your life. And I can imagine that it's just the most degrading thing in the world. And scary, too. Like, what are you going to drink? What are you going to eat? I wouldn't want to move, you know? And I've always heard horror stories about even, like, local, like Metro, and how overcrowded it gets and, you know, the filthy conditions of these holding facilities, you know? The food quality. It just, you know, I don't understand why they can't just – they've got people in there. Why don't they let them? Make them do the work, you know, let the prisoners clean the place. Keep up with those things. Be responsible for the cleanliness of the place and drinking water. I thought that's how that worked. You know, of course, you know, I'm probably thinking of TV, but, you know, it seems like they got plenty of labor and they're just sitting there like animals and left in squalor. And I mean, that's not, nobody's going to be rehabilitated from that. They're going to be traumatized, you know, and guess what they want for their PTSD? They want cannabis, you know, and it's just this vicious cycle. I've been fascinated with the fact that, you know, there's got to be more to it if people are still willing to go back and risk that, because for a little bit of peace of mind, you know, just to and I understand that. I've been there myself, and I use the wrong substance, but you know, that need to just quiet that sort of storm inside of you when you've been through something terribly traumatic. And I imagine just the arrest and the booking process, sitting there waiting for a trial, knowing that, you know, you don't have money for a lawyer, you know, and you just wanted to get up and go to work that day. And your kids, too. I mean, all that. There's so many factors in that. And then there's people miles away that are making a living from selling it in with the government's blessing. That's the craziest part to me.
Yeah. Millions, making millions.
Millions. I know. I talked to a guy in Arizona that, when he told me how much his sales were a month in one dispensary, I almost fell out of my chair. It's crazy.
And also creating thousands of jobs.
Exactly.
And generating a lot of tax revenue.
Just revive the farming industry in this state, you know, and just the opportunity to teach people how to grow, because, you know, you never know what's going to happen. We still need to know how to take care of ourselves. There may not always be a drive-through. I mean, look at all the businesses that are closing and things that just aren't the same. All of a sudden, no one expected that. Anything could happen, you know. But to be able to use your hands to do something, to grow something, I think people who come out of prison from marijuana charges should be given jobs in the hemp fields that are legal in Alabama, because, you know, it's they have some experience with the plants, you know, and it would give them something to do that would be worth, you know, the rehabilitation,
right?
And they wouldn't go back to, you know, whatever, because you can't get a good job.
Right.
Of course, the temptation to do something illegal is there even more, because how are you supposed to live?
Right. And so, and you know, you mentioned that you had somebody that you know personally that's done this significant amount of time for personal use, 8 years, marijuana, and there's an interesting case right here in Alabama that's been in the news.
Lately, with a veteran
from
out
of state.
Yes, when we come back, we're going to talk about a disabled vet who was arrested for medical marijuana in Alabama.
Back to Sweet Home Cannabama. Now with all the information you want about CBD, here's your host, Jennifer Boozer.
Welcome back to the show, everybody. I'm Jennifer Boozer. We're here with Alan Colvin talking about decriminalization, about marijuana sentencing. If anybody would like to call in and ask a question at any point, we're going to start to talk about this case of a disabled veteran who was arrested in Alabama on a road trip while stopping for gas. And we're going to get into that. But if anybody would like to call in and ask a question or has some comment, we're open to that. The number is 343-0106. Sorry, 343-0106. Okay, so this guy, he's a disabled veteran, Sean Worsley, from Arizona. Traveling through Alabama, right? Stopping for gas. Gordo, Alabama. I've never heard of Gordo, Alabama.
Well, it's funny that you say you've never heard of Gordo, Alabama. When I was at law school in Tuscaloosa, we had to take a trial ad class, one of our mandatory first-year trial advocacy class. And we had an adjunct professor, and his name was Chris McCool. And he was a He was an assistant DA, I think, at the time in Pickens County, which is where
right,
this happened.
Right, Pickens County.
And he told stories of his younger days when he was practicing law about how it was a regular occurrence and just extremely normal for people to bring him freshly grown vegetables or maybe a farm animal or that sort of thing as payment for legal fees.
Wow.
And so what we're taught, this judicial circuit, where Pickens County is located, it's a tri-county circuit, so there's three counties there mm-hmm. that are encompassed in that one circuit. And these are the counties that are just west of Tuscaloosa.
Okay.
They're in between Tuscaloosa and the Mississippi state line.
Okay.
Okay.
Dirty South.
That's right. Pretty
Deliverance land.
Yeah. Pretty stereotypical, you know, kind of like the My Cousin Vinny section of Alabama.
Wow, yeah. Okay, so we're talking backwoods. Okay, well, with a name like Gordo.
That's right. And Sean Worsley, he's a disabled veteran, 33-year-old guy now. He was actually a Purple Heart recipient.
He has a traumatic brain injury, post-traumatic stress disorder, substance abuse for years because he had nightmares, back pain.
That's right.
Don't even want to know how the traumatic brain injury happened. Usually it's some sort of IED or, you know, something where their bodies are just thrown.
Well, that was one of the things that he did when he served in Iraq was he and his company would, one of the things they would do is they would go out and they would locate and they would dismantle IEDs.
Right, you know? Right, like that movie Hurt Locker. Wow.
Yeah.
That's a favorite at our house.
Yeah, and there was an incident that resulted in a traumatic brain injury for him.
Yeah,
but he and his wife had been. This was back in August of 2016 mm-hmm. When the arrest took place, and he and his wife had been visiting her family in Mississippi, and then they were driving to visit his family in North Carolina. His grandmother had been displaced because of a hurricane. He was going to go over there and help with that situation, do some work on her house, mm-hmm. that sort of thing. And as they were driving through, they stopped at a gas station in Gordo, Alabama. And apparently they had some loud music. There was a report that the officer said the music was too loud.
Right. And so there was a noise ordinance.
That's right, and that's why he
it didn't end there, and he didn't, you know, wasn't just turn down your music.
That's right, and
how you go from turn down your music to let me search your car, I'll never know, except the magic words, do you smell weed? I smell weed.
That's right, and he...
And that's one thing that happened to my friend, that he said there was absolutely no smell of any kind of smoke, but, right. you know, oh, do you smell weed? Let me search your car.
And so the officer did approach and said that he smelled marijuana, and Mr. and Mrs. Worsley didn't think there was any problem with that because Mr. Worsley had a medical marijuana card from
right.
his home state of Arizona,
yeah.
and so they consented to the officer to let the officer search the vehicle.
They obviously didn't have
right.
think they had anything to hide.
They didn't think they had anything to hide. But regardless, just as an aside. It's probably never a good idea to consent
right.
For law enforcement to search
right.
your vehicle. Either they already have probable cause or they don't. But
mm-hmm.
if you consent, then you basically forfeit your right to argue that they did not have probable cause to search your vehicle.
Right.
So you kind of, you know.
Yeah. Should they have done in that situation?
They said no thank you? They should have said no thank you. Now, the officer probably would have called in another unit, and you know, since he said he smelled marijuana, that's
mm-hmm.
enough probable cause right there that he can. So that's, you know, like you say, the magic words,
right?
But you know, it would have been something they could have argued about later on, and would have given them more leverage, some leverage in the case,
right?
Okay, as opposed to just giving that leverage away right there on the scene. So they let him search the vehicle. They didn't think they had anything to hide because he had a medical marijuana card from Arizona.
Right.
And of course,
and they found marijuana.
Yeah, and they found medical marijuana there in the back seat of the car. And they also found there was some prescription pills that belonged to his wife that she had a prescription for.
Right.
And I don't think she had the prescription with her, but she had the prescription. And there was also alcohol in the vehicle, which that's a dry county. So they were
really pushing it.
That's
yeah.
right.
But
so,
I mean, what are the chances they knew any of that?
That's right. So the officer ended up arresting them both and charging both of them with all of those offenses. You know, she was charged with first degree possession of marijuana and the possession of alcohol, just like he was.
Mm-hmm.
So they were both arrested for it, taken to jail there in Gordo, Alabama. The car was impounded, and they spent about 6 days in jail. Then they bonded out, and once they bonded out, they had to pay. I think I read they had to pay $400 to get the car out of impound,
mm-hmm.
And you know, in addition to making bond,
right?
And they had been remember they had been visiting some of her family in Mississippi.
Right.
And somebody in her family was a hunter and had given them some venison that they were taking to North Carolina with them.
Oh, God.
And they had left it in the vehicle. And
this is in
August.
Oh.
So
that's slow roasted right
yeah.
there.
So they had some slow roasted venison in their car when they got it out of impound.
I got chill bumps at how gross that sounds. My gag reflex is going, no.
Yeah. So they bond out, and then they go back to Arizona,
mm-hmm.
and they eventually come back to Alabama. They get a call late. This was in late 2017. They get a call saying, "Hey, you got to be in court for your case. You mm-hmm. need to come on back to Alabama." So they come back to Alabama, and you know, there's some things in the article. That she states, well, Ms. Worsley states they get back to the to court in Alabama, and they bring them in separate rooms in the courtroom and in the courthouse.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because this is a time for it seems like from looking at the court file that this is a date for them to either enter into a plea,
right,
or tell
preliminary
the
hearing, kind
yeah,
of thing.
or tell the judge, hey, that we're. We're taking this case to trial,
mm-hmm.
and some of the issues that Mr. Worsley had with a traumatic brain injury and post-traumatic stress syndrome. His wife was actually, you know, his caretaker of sorts as
right.
well.
Of course.
And so once they separated them, well, they're co-defendants, so they're going to have separate lawyers,
mm-hmm.
and it's not going to be so. It may have seemed like, you know, hey, I'm his caretaker, and you're separating us.
Right.
And I need to be with him while he's listening to what his lawyer's saying.
Right.
But since they're co-defendants,
she can't do that.
Yeah, she can't do that. And so.
And that, not to mention, it's double the lawyers and costs and stuff.
That's right. So what happens is he ends up pleading there to felony marijuana possession.
Wow.
Which, you know.
And she didn't.
Well, and that's what, you know. They say after the fact that they basically told him that they're going to proceed with charges against both of them. So, you know,
and
they're
he
gonna,
thinks he's going to fall on his sword
right,
for
so
his wife.
That's right.
Wow.
That's exactly right.
Because he's a soldier and that's what he does. Wow.
Right.
That's disgusting.
And you know, a lot of times you'll see that in cases like that. They're called constructive possession, where if a vehicle is pulled over and they find drugs or marijuana or whatever
mm-hmm.
it may be in the car, but it's not actually on someone's person.
Right. It could, yeah.
It could belong to either one of them.
It could have belonged to the homeless guy they just dropped off.
Right.
Yeah.
So they charge both of them, and it's charged under a theory of constructive possession,
mm-hmm.
which means, you know, you legally own it. You
mm-hmm.
know, you have the authority to exercise dominion over it, even though it's not on your person.
Right.
So then the government's charged with proving that you actually knew that it was there, and you knew it was illegal, and that you know you had authority to exercise dominion over it.
Right.
Well, a lot of times in constructive possession, you have two different people, so it's like you know people pointing the finger at each
other. Right. Nobody wants to go to jail.
And the prosecutor and you know the government likes that because they basically just wait for one person to take responsibility for it.
Right.
And in this kind of situation, I think that is a yet another thing that caused him to lose some of his leverage to negotiate that case and maybe get that case to move from a felony charge down to a misdemeanor charge.
Right.
Because, you know, he's thinking, hey, if I don't just...
Right, because, I mean, you can't deny that he had it.
Yeah, but if he's thinking, if I don't take the blame for everything...
My wife is going to go to jail too, right.
They're going to keep going after my wife.
Right.
And
wow.
So,
wow. Well, I mean, they're obviously you play on a man's affection for his wife, but you also... You know, his they know that guys that are soldiers are going to do something like that. They're typically the ones that are willing to go in harm's way for us. And so they know they're going to do that for their wife. But also, I mean, having a brand injury, to me, you know, I don't think that they should have let him. I mean, is that okay to take advantage of someone who has a brand injury? We don't know how it affects you. You know, there could be lots of reasons that don't even really show themselves. But his decision-making process and the fear of his wife ending up in prison, I mean, that's got to be terrible because it was his medicine. You know, they weren't worried about the pills because they were pills and they were hers.
That's right. And she had a valid prescription.
Right.
And they dropped those charges.
Right.
Because
alcohol in a dry county, I mean, they were passing through. But, man, they latched on that weed, I bet. And, I mean, maybe they didn't know. What are the laws? Can you just not leave your state? If you live in a medical state, you know, that's why we need to have federal legalization for medical because, you know, a lot of people, they end up in Colorado as marijuana refugees. So many families from Alabama. I know people that work in the industry from Alabama. They leave so that they can have access to the plant, but they can't leave. They can't leave or their kid will have a seizure. You know, or they can't leave because their kid will get sick and they can't see their family and they lose everything. So, you know, it's crazy because more states than not now have medical. And we're halfway there,
and
for
states.
Him to have gone through all that for years, we haven't even gotten to what happened at the end and all that it cost him. So when we come back, we'll conclude the show with the rest of the story and wrap it up with Ellen Colvin.
Welcome back to Sweet Home Canabama. Now with all the information you want about CBD, here's your host, Jennifer Boozer.
All right, welcome back to the show, everybody. We're talking about this case of the disabled veteran who was pulled over. Well, no, he wasn't. He was approached at a gas station for loud music, searched. They found marijuana that he had a medical card for. He and his wife were arrested, and we're sort of getting to the part where they've gone to court now. He sort of took the blame for everything so that his wife would not go to jail, and... sort of coming to the part where we talk about the sentencing. He went through years of legal battle, and it cost him thousands of dollars in legal fees. He ended up homeless, and it concluded with a 60-month prison sentence. It's 5 years in jail.
Yeah, and it didn't go straight to that.
Right.
You know, but when he entered into his plea in late in 2017, his sentence as part of the deal that he pled to was a five-year jail sentence, with that jail sentence being suspended for 5 years of formal probation. And there were also costs and fines associated with that sentence that were over $3,800.
Yeah.
But But you know, that's 5 years of probation, and that's where you're obligated to report to a probation officer every month, and you're required to take drug screens. Well, and that's part of the issue. You say in Alabama. Well, he lives in
right. I mean, would he have to move here?
He lives in Arizona. Well, he applied to have his probation transferred out to Arizona. And once they went back after the initial arrest, they went out there. That's when he and his wife started having a lot of trouble out there in Arizona. She had the arrest on her record. It started causing her problems with employment and obtaining and keeping gainful employment. And so they ran into those issues that you talked about. I mean, they had financial problems. They even had a stint of homelessness. And they had to go through a program with the Veterans Administration for homeless vets to get back on their feet, and they were going through that program 6 months, and so they applied he applied to have his probation transferred out to Arizona, and he was going through going through this program and having these troubles with maintaining housing. Mm-hmm. And so one of the issues he had with the probation officer that he got in Arizona was that probation officer was trying to verify a home address for him there in Arizona. And he's having these issues of homelessness, and he's got a month-to-month rental. And something happened where they did not want to approve that as a resident and told him he had to report back to Alabama to find out. And so he's calling Alabama, and Alabama's telling him that he's got to come back to Alabama to reapply to resubmit his transfer and go through that transfer process all over again.
And any one of those things could put him in prison,
right?
Because it's a violation.
Right. And so that's where it got off track as far as, you know, probation and keeping up with his reporting and all that, and his situation with his homelessness, and of course he's got PTSD, he's got short-term memory issues, and his wife started having some health problems, and she's, you know, having to have a surgery.
All the time about how elevated stress levels at a continued level can wreck your health.
Right. So that's where he got off track, you know, with the probation issue. And so he's living out in Arizona, and then eventually, and this was I think in late 2019, he's pulled over while he's driving in Arizona. And of course, he's got an outstanding warrant from Alabama for a probation issue on a felony case. And the officers that pull him over don't tell him don't worry about it. They don't think that Alabama is going to want to come get you and bring you back to Alabama for a little marijuana case.
What are the chances? That's true. Arizona don't know.
They
will come to Alaska.
Well, as you can imagine, Alabama did indeed want to get him, and at a cost of $4,345 for transfer back to Alabama, because that's monies that they tacked onto his case. That's what it cost the state of Alabama to go get him and extradite him and bring him back to Alabama for a probation violation hearing. And that's what happens when you violate your probation. You end up back in front of the judge.
Right.
And then the judge decides, you know, are you going to have to go ahead and serve that full sentence since you didn't comply properly with your probation, and so that's what happened. The judge has revoked his probation, and
now he has to serve the whole 60 months.
Serve the whole 60 months.
Wow.
And one interesting thing about, you know, one requirement of his probation was that he received drug treatment. And he applied with the Veterans Administration to get into a drug treatment program through the VA.
Mm-hmm.
And there was actually got a letter from the VA that said, Mr. Worsley uses cannabis for medical purposes with a legitimate medical prescription, so he does not meet criteria for a substance use disorder or need for substance abuse treatment.
Exactly.
So this is the Veterans Administration saying, hey, what he's doing.
By the way, I'm actually shocked. I really am.
Yeah, so the VA is saying, you know, what he's doing is doesn't even meet the criteria for someone who needs
who needs
drug treatment, and here we are in Alabama, taking a totally different view of that. Now the Veterans Administration, you know, they don't prescribe marijuana,
right?
But they do encourage all their clinical people and pharmacists to discuss that marijuana or cannabis,
right? And they're not going to penalize patients for going to someone who would.
Right, yeah. So
it's acceptable to the VA.
That's right. It's acceptable to them, even though they don't prescribe it. They encourage their folks to discuss it with veterans who ask about it.
And so this guy's already lost all quality of life and God knows what else since 2016.
Right.
And now he's going to go to jail for 5 years.
That's right. And he's got two children, ages 12 and 14.
Oh, gosh. Wow. Well, I saw this quote. And I thought it was really sad that he said in a letter that he wrote from the Pickens County Jail to Alabama Appleseed, a criminal justice organization that published this detailed account of the case, "I feel like I'm being thrown away by a country I went and served for. I feel like I lost parts of me in Iraq, parts of my spirit and soul that I can't ever get back." That makes me so sad. And that he would just be taking the medicine that even the VA hospital would be totally fine with, that was legal in his state, and be traveling with his family to help his family and end up, I mean, his family must be in a shambles. His poor kids, I mean, they had to have been really small when this started, you know? I mean, they had to have been like first graders to be that young now. And, you know, because it's not legal here. And yet we're voting on it. We're considering it. I think we are.
There's been a lot of lip service to it. No significant
action
yet.
So what happens? Are they just going to stop doing this? What about the people that are in jail when we legalize? They still have to serve their sentences. I mean, none of this makes any sense at all. Because now, you know, what if you got sentenced the day before they legalized to 10 years?
Right.
You know, that's insanity. And then, or if you've been arrested before, you can't work in the industry. You're excluded from it. Even the hemp industry, 10 years. If you have any kind of drug conviction, again, those people, a lot of times, were already growing and they know a little something about something.
And that's always, you know, another battle, even when change is made, to make things retroactive and to, you know, to help people who have already suffered consequences under our current system.
It seems like it's an insurmountable obstacle, but we got to do better than this. Alan, thank you so much for being with us again tonight. I always enjoy our conversations. I'm sure we'll find something else to talk about again soon before the election. Everybody go out and vote, absentee vote. Let's do better. Thank you so much, and we'll see you next week on Sweet Home Cannabama.
Thank you, Jen.